those spare moments before he'd chosen to take his own life. Everything suddenly made sense. He knew he was going to jump when I met him. He was excited for it. His hopes and dreams, Helmuth said now. And his fears. Helmuth blanched. The words seemed to cut through the blank spaces in what he was saying, probing into his own thoughts, his own fears. He nodded, his teeth grinding together. He knew this man was supposed to be powerful, feared. But he'd known kings. His grandfather and father were kings, and his younger brother would one day become one, and he knew they were just men at their core. Anger coursed through him. There was a tightening in his chest, and then a throb. The thing he'd held back since Blackstone stirred in him, and he knew if he opened himself up to it, even a crack, it would spill from him like light through an open doorway. He breathed deeply, holding that energy back. Yes, he feared you. He killed himself because of you. Helmuth expected a reaction, fierce and quick. Perhaps the king would attack him. Perhaps he would order his soldiers to attack him. Krakow must have feared the same, for he took a step forward and said, "Your Highness, we've had a long trip. The boy is tired. Anyway, I take full responsibility for Vryn's death. I allowed them to go to the top of the tower. I shouldn't have. I will accept my punishment." The king, however, didn't seem angry at either of them. "Dismissed," he said to Krakow. "Your Highness, go." The word wasn't shouted, and yet it held all the power of one that had been. "Yes, Your Highness." Krakow bowed slightly, offering a look of warning to Helmuth, and then mounted his carriage, turned the horses around, and left. Without being instructed, the soldiers followed. Helmuth was alone now, with the most powerful man in the world. The king stepped closer. He wore a radiant green doublet adorned with black shoulder pads. His trousers were black, as well as his belt. Fine black boots completed the ensemble, clicking slightly on the hard ground. "Do you fear me?" he asked, his chin cocking to the side. Though all of Helmuth's weight was propped up by the crutches, he felt his knees quiver, a contradiction to that throb in his chest. He didn't know the answer, so he said nothing. Another step. So close now he could see the individual hairs in the king's thin moustache. That darkness inside him felt poised to leap, to lunge. "Please don't," Helmuth thought, pleading with it as if it was human. He remembered how it had felt the first time, the fear he'd sensed in everyone and everything around him. The dread. To his surprise, the throb receded, distant now. A reminder it was still there, nothing more. Not yet. "You shouldn't," the king said, extending a single pale hand. Helmuth wanted to move away to avoid the inevitable touch he knew was coming, but also realized that would be a mistake. This man was used to getting what he wanted, as all kings are, and to deny him was to make him your enemy. And Helmuth couldn't afford to make this man his enemy, at least not yet. "I will never hurt you," the king said, the moment he touched his skin. His fingers were smoother than Helmuth expected. He closed his eyes as they traced his chin, his lips, his nose. They stroked his eyebrows, fluttered his eyelashes. They probed beneath his earlobes, pinching them slightly. Every touch made him feel violated. "Yes," the king purred. "I can work with this." Helmuth's eyes snapped open. "What?" The king smiled, and it was a devil's smile. He ruffled Helmuth's hair before retracting his hand. "You are an untouched canvas, and I am an artist. Call it a hobby, if you must call it anything. I take things that are thrown out, unwanted, and make them beautiful." With the last word, a light seemed to radiate from the man's very being. He even licked his lips slightly, a simple gesture that felt foul in this context. He could picture it now. Vryn, younger and rougher around the edges, standing before this man, hearing these same words. Perhaps he was relieved by them, his worst fears alleviated by the kindness in the king's smile. Over time, however, that relief had turned to fear, self-hatred, enough to drive him to throw himself from the tallest building in the world. Helmuth, despite his anger, shivered slightly. The pulse in his chest sped up, louder, hotter, hungry. The king leaned forward until his lips were a breath away from Helmuth's ear. "Tell me, child, how did Vryn look before he jumped?" Helmuth didn't want to answer, but he knew he had to. And the answer was a single word, more truthful than anything he'd uttered in his entire life. "Beautiful," he said. Thankfully, the king called for a servant after that, a woman with dull grey hair and sad green eyes. Without being commanded, she escorted him from the throne room, down a narrower tunnel that led to a series of open rooms on either side. As Helmuth passed each opening, he glanced inside. In each room was a bed, and on each bed sat another child, all boys. They wore either green or black clothes, basic pants and shirts. Their feet dangled from the beds, bare of shoes or stockings. They stared at him without expression. He had the distinct impression they were dead, even though his logic told him they were not. Still, their stares seemed not to settle on him, but cut through him. "These boys are like Vryn," Helmuth thought. "The king's playthings." None of them looked injured, not physically anyway. But Helmuth knew better than most that there were other ways to hurt. "Why are you doing this?" Helmuth asked the woman. She didn't turn toward him, didn't respond. He suspected she heard the pleadings of children all the time and had become immune to it, or numb, or both. Eventually, 10 or so doors down the hall, she stopped, gesturing him inside a small stone vestibule. Finally, she spoke. "Change. I will wait for you." Helmuth crouched inside, immediately locating the green trousers and linen shirt folded neatly on the bed. He sat, his pulse pounding. To put these on felt like defeat. Would he spend the rest of his life in this dark place, only seeing sunlight on the king's terms? Would he suffer the king's hands on his skin day in and day out, at the ruler's will and whim? Was this why he had left the oppression of his former life? Only to end up oppressed in an entirely different way. He pulled his shirt over his head, tossing it on the floor. The woman bent over to pick it up, while he tugged on the new one. It felt light and clean. It felt like the bars of a prison. When he paused, she said, "Now the pants." "No." It wasn't a sense of modesty that made him deny her. It was something deeper. Something that had been building in him since the moment his father denied him his birthright. As she looked at him, he saw her expression change. It was like a clay mask was cracking, peeling away, revealing the true woman hidden beneath. "Please," was all she said. But he heard the unspoken volumes beneath that single word. This woman had seen horrors, and she couldn't bear to witness another. Helmuth swallowed, bending down to tug off his trousers. He fought with the new pair for a few moments, but he was accustomed to dealing with legs that didn't obey his commands, and soon he wore the required garb. "Come," she said, "I will wash you." Helmuth had never felt so utterly inhuman. Though he knew in his heart she hated what she was doing, he still wanted the woman to look at him as she scrubbed the weeks of salt and grime from his skin. He wanted her to see that he was a person, not a possession. He tried speaking. "What is he going to do, Jimmy?" The tightening of her lips. A quick, unnecessary blink. "She is trying to block me out, to pretend I'm not real. It's her defense mechanism. Please, I won't fight it, but I need to know." Her eyes closed, opened. Her hands, however, seemed to operate independently of her mind, her emotions, never ceasing their work. "You are an untouched canvas," the king had said. But that wasn't true, was it? It wasn't about physical touching, though the memory of the king's hands on his face made his skin crawl. Helmer's entire life he'd felt beat up, knocked down, even if no one had ever physically abused him. He didn't have the scars to prove it, though he knew if his heart was carved from his chest and examined, it would be bruised and laced with slashes. To his surprise, the woman spoke.
"It is better if you don't fight him."
She spoke so low, less than a whisper, and he had to lean closer to hear.
"Did Vryn fight him?"
The woman's entire body jolted, and a shudder ran through her.
"Vryn was special to the king."
That word, special, that might have been a compliment in another context, felt like a vile curse. For some reason Vryn had been favoured by the king, which likely meant he was called forth more often than the others. Day by day he'd been driven closer and closer to the brink, until...
Why?
The question hung in the air between them, and for the first time the woman's hands ceased their scrubbing. Her eyes met his, and in that single stolen look he could see the self-hatred and fear, the anger and weariness and sadness.
"Because he took the longest to break," she finally said.
She stood and handed him a towel.
"Now get dressed."
Lying in bed, waiting for something, Helmuth stewed. The anger, as it had in Blackstone, seemed to take form inside him, a claw, gnashing teeth, a monstrous shadow. His heart ceased to beat, replaced by the pulse of a force more powerful than any he'd experienced in his life, even that of kings. Familiar thoughts returned.
"What am I? What is this thing inside me?"
The next thought, however, was altogether different.
"How can I use this against King Strait?"
Used to being tormented and mocked, Helmuth had never been prone to violence. Even if he'd wanted to lash out at those who'd bullied him, he would only look like a fool, unable to do more than stand in place and swing his crutches in wild arcs. Even his own nasty brother, Wulfric, had been unwilling to face him in combat. Not for fear of losing, but for fear of being part of such a ridiculous spectacle. But now, he remembered the fog he'd created somehow. Despair had radiated from it. He'd seen the fear in the eyes of grown men, the same men who'd oppressed him and the other boys, forcing them to work for an unseen lord hidden behind the walls of a great castle. At first, he'd been scared of whatever was clawing at his insides, trying to get out. But now, what did he have to lose? Many hours later, the grey-haired woman appeared at his door.
"The king has summoned you."
He wanted to say no, but knew that was a mistake. Openly defying the king would bring his wrath down on them all. He swung his feet over the side of the bed and grabbed up his crutches. The corridor was as quiet as before, flickering with torchlight. He ignored the gazes he felt as he passed the open rooms, the faceless boys who came before him. Underground, time seemed to move differently, slowing, slowing, and then speeding up like a rolling wave, finally crashing on the shore. He crashed into the throne room, where he saw the stone chair from behind. Bright torches burned all around, fixed into standing stone pedestals. The bright, sunny sky was long gone, replaced by a night sooty with grey clouds. On the edges of the throne, there a black boot, there a smooth hand, fingers absently drumming the armrest. The tip of a dark-haired scalp, groomed perfectly. "Leave," the invisible king said. The command wasn't for Helmuth, and though the king surely could not see her, the woman bowed and departed the way they'd come. And then... "Approach." Helmuth crouched over, arcing around the raised platform until he stood before the king. His four legs were all set in a row, two useless flesh and bone, and two finely carved wood. A gift from this very man. The king's dark eyes were full of something akin to amusement, but not quite. Excitement. "You are ashamed by your legs. Why?"
"I am not ashamed."
Helmuth's response came too fast, and even he could hear the lie in his voice. "Why?" the king repeated, and Helmuth sensed he didn't want to ask the question a third time. But what could he say? That he was mocked as a child? That his own father had believed him to be too weak to inherit his birthright? That he'd run away from wealth and privilege so he could become a beggar on the streets? All these terrible things were caused by his withered legs, weren't they? So, yes, he was ashamed of them. He hated them. More than that, he hated that his eyes pooled with tears and that one broke loose from each eye, meandering down his cheeks, funneling to the tip of his chin. The king had risen at some point, though Helmuth couldn't remember when. Now he stood before him. He cupped his hand and reached out. Helmuth didn't recoil, though he wanted to. But the king didn't touch him, no. He simply placed his cupped hand beneath his chin and caught the tears before they could fall to the ground. "You don't need them any more," he said with a soft smile. And then, while Helmuth puzzled over the meaning of his words, King Strait kicked out Helmuth's new crutches. The king had left after that, taking the crutches and leaving Helmuth lying on the floor, the skin of his elbows and wrists burning where they had been scraped by the fall. He lay there for a while, staring up at the ashy sky, waiting for the woman to return to help him back to his room. No one came. Eventually he pulled himself to a sitting position, drawing the legs of his pants up. His withered legs seemed to glow in the darkness, pale and small. He understood something. Without his crutches, he could be more easily controlled. The king wouldn't have to worry about him escaping, if the king ever worried about such trivial things. It's not like the rooms had doors on them, and yet the boys all sat there staring, obediently waiting to be summoned. They were broken, defeated, hopeless. "Then what hope do I have?" Helmuth thought. Though he knew the answer was none, he rejected that. He'd made it this far without his father, without his brothers and sister, without the status that came with being a prince, even a maimed one. So, inch by painful inch, he crawled out of the room, down the hall, and into his room, dragging his useless legs behind him. When he reached the bed, he pulled himself up using the frame and post, falling once, banging his elbow. But he was determined, and he tried again. The second time he made it, slumping onto the thin mattress, his chest heaving. He fell into a deep, dreamless sleep. The next day, or was it still night, Helmuth half expected to find his crutches back by his bedside. They were not. His arms were sore and bruised, so he lay in bed, staring at the rough stone ceiling. He heard muffled sounds from time to time, other boys being summoned, presumably, but not him. He wondered about that open door to his room. He hadn't been commanded not to leave his room. Did that mean he could? Did the other boys simply choose not to leave out of fear? "The boredom will drive me mad long before the king does," he thought. He slipped from his bed, easing himself down to the floor. The thought of dragging himself across the abrasive ground again almost made him rethink his decision. So he tried something else. He placed his palms on the ground, locked his elbows, and lifted himself up until his behind hovered a few inches off the floor. He crossed his feet together for balance. He could move them that much at least. Taking a deep breath, he took a step, moving his hand forward, his arm almost giving way under his own small weight. To his surprise, however, it held. His arms, unlike his legs, were not weak. Though he'd never specifically trained them, they'd grown used to doing everything for him. They didn't fail him now, though the next 6 paces toward the door took a long time, and he had to rest after every 2. When he reached the gap in the wall, he peered down the corridor. Nothing moved. Silence ruled. Silence and a king. Helmuth was spent. It was all he could do to reverse course and make his way back to his bed. By the time he reached his bedside, he had no strength left to pull himself back up. So he curled up on the unforgiving ground and drifted into a restless sleep. In the 2 weeks that followed, though it might have been 2 months, for all Helmuth could tell, the grey-haired woman often passed his room, but never stopped, never even looked in.
Like clockwork, however, he would awaken to find food and drink. It was usually hot, like she'd left it there the instant before he awoke. The food was fit for the palate of kings, and Helmuth knew it well, though he ate not for taste but for strength, replenishing his depleted reserves. For he had not been idle, practicing his new way of getting around, strengthening his arms and core muscles. He could now make the jaunt to the door and back again 12 times over without trouble, and even pull himself back into bed afterwards. He felt a strange sense of accomplishment each time, though he knew it was but a fraction of what normal people could do. So, day by day, he dined on duck confit and rose-petal soup and stewed snails in garlic sauce, guzzling the tins of water and taking only small sips of the strawberry wine that accompanied his meals. Helmuth grew stronger. The grey-haired woman returned when he was halfway through his daily exercises. "The king," he said, raising his eyebrows and feeling a shred of something between fear and excitement. He wasn't sure why the excitement was there, except perhaps because it was something different. Though his exercises distracted him, the boredom was always there, hanging like a fine mist. She nodded. "Follow me." She turned and walked away, not offering any assistance. The king instructed her not to, Helmuth thought, as certain of this fact as he was of anything in this place. He followed, feeling not unlike a crab as he departed his room, one hand at a time. He forced himself to go slowly, to pace himself, his eyes forward, ignoring the temptation to peek into the other rooms and gauge the boy's reactions. "This is nothing," he reminded himself, a thought which fell away the moment he entered the sunny throne room and saw the king standing there, his face awash with an expression that could only be pride. It practically radiated from him, his eyes sparkling not with amusement but with satisfaction. His lips knit together and he nodded. Helmuth couldn't help it. He bathed in that expression, relishing the pride of someone he barely knew and didn't want to know, because he'd never felt pride like that before, certainly not from his own father. "You see, son, you never needed those crutches, did you?" Helmuth found himself nodding, and beaming. His lips curled into a smile that made his cheeks ache. "What am I doing?" The smile faded. "I did not," Helmuth said, feeling suddenly empty, hollow. He'd thought he was doing something for himself, but now he understood. He'd done exactly what the king had wanted him to. He did this for the king. Now, King Strait stepped forward and reached out. Not toward Helmuth, but into empty air, grabbing something Helmuth hadn't noticed before. A rope. Helmuth craned his head back to follow the rope's path, where it reached the opening in the ceiling, curling out of sight over the boulder's edge. "Climb," the king said. Helmuth stared at the rope, not understanding. Well, he did understand, but tried to deny the truth of what his brain was telling him. "What if I fall?" "Try again," the king said. "How high?" He already knew the answer. Felt it, in the icy dread shivering down his spine. "To the top." With that, the king left him alone with the rope under a beautiful azure sky mixed with puffy white clouds. Helmuth's skin was slick with blood and sweat. His hands were rough and scraped, chafed by the rope, which cut into him each time he touched it. He'd lost count of how many times he'd fallen, even as day turned to night, the clouds clearing to reveal a heavenly firmament glittering with stars of many colours. He was bruised and bleeding, and it was a wonder he hadn't broken any bones, at least as far as he knew. The most severe of the falls had been from a height almost as tall as the king, made worse by the fact that he'd tried to prevent it by grabbing at the rope, which only jolted his body into an awkward twist. He'd landed on his shoulder, barely cushioning the landing, before his head cracked down a moment later. Now, stars danced before his vision, and he was beginning to wonder whether they had fallen from the sky with him. A voice snapped his head to the side, and he tried to blink away the spots of colour. Krako, the carriage driver, stood there, looking strangely alone and naked without his wagon and horses.
"You all right?"
he asked, leaning to the side to look at him. The question seemed to jar something loose in Helmuth, and he nodded.
"I will be, just as soon as I escape from the king."
Escape? There was no escape.
I'm sorry,
Krakow said, running a hand through his thick beard. Helmuth knew the man's apology should anger him. After all, it was he who had delivered him to the king. But it didn't. From everything he knew about Krakow, he didn't seem like a bad man. Who knew what leverage the king had over him?
"I should keep climbing," Helmuth said,
though the thought of falling again made him nauseous.
"You should rest first. Here, have some water and food."
The man reached down and collected a tray from the ground, holding it out. Realization flooded through him.
"He sent you?"
Krakow nodded. Helmuth's heart ceased beating, replaced by the pulse of something other, a different kind of beat. Darkness to light. Shadows to flame. Before he could clamp down on the energy bristling inside him, it was already out, fog wafting from him like smoke from a fire. Krakow took a staggering step back, nearly dropping the tray.
"What the?"
he started to say. But then he dropped to his knees, his body shaking, ropes of mist surrounding him.
"Please,"
he wailed.
"Please don't. Please don't. Please, please, please."
His words descended into shuddering sobs, tears pouring down his cheeks and dripping onto the food he'd brought. The sight unnerved Helmuth, and he managed to grab a hold of the smoke, not with his hands, but with his mind, much like a horseman might regain control of a Mustang via its reins. The mist returned to him, melting into his skin.
"It obeyed me,"
he thought, staring at his own chest with awe. Just beneath his thin linen shirt, a light glowed softly, occasionally blinking. Then it was gone. Slowly, Krakow stopped convulsing. The tears stopped flowing. He looked up, his eyes wide and white. And then he ran. Helmuth considered running, too. Well, crab walking away as fast as he could, down the hall and wherever it led after that, hopefully to a way out. In the end, however, he realized that such a rash decision was foolish. He would only be caught and punished. So he sat down to wait, sliding the tray over and dining on cold pepper lychee soup, garlic buttered pumpernickel, and braised pork tendon. He gulped the small cup of water and then, after only a moment's hesitation, did the same with the wine, a rose-colored concoction that tasted both sweet and bitter. The entire time he expected to hear the telltale clop of the king's fine boots echoing from the tunnel, his angry strides announcing his return. Surely Krakow would tell him what happened. Surely the king would be furious. He would bring soldiers with him.
"They won't be enough,"
Helmuth thought, the idea startling him. Violent visions danced through his head. Men writhing, tearing at their armor. Soldiers turning their swords on themselves, their killing strokes swift and unmerciful. And the king, the most powerful king in the world, begging for mercy from a cripple. Helmuth gasped, feeling nausea rise in the back of his throat. Though he was no stranger to stories of violence, after all, they were some of his favorites. They were only stories. He had no desire to see people hurt in real life, and certainly didn't want to do the hurting himself. He knew the king deserved all that and worse, but
what?
There is something inside you, something powerful, something you can use. Steeling himself, Helmuth made a decision, though it scared him greatly. If the king came to hurt him, for the first time in his life, he would fight back. The king never came. The sky above him grew darker, then lighter still, until faint strands of sunlight danced along the edges of the hole cut in the boulder. Finally, bone-weary, Helmuth crabbed his way back to his room, dragged himself into bed, and fell instantly asleep. 3 seconds later, he was awakened by a noise. Or at least, that was how it felt. In reality, his sleep could have lasted for 3 days or 3 weeks. There was no telling in this windowless place. He turned toward the sound. The grey-haired woman stood in the doorway, clasping a tray.
"Eat," she said.
She placed the tray on the ground and started to leave.
"What is your name?"
Helmuth found himself asking, though he had not known he was going to ask until the words left his mouth.
"Why didn't I think to ask earlier?"
It occurred to him that no one had asked his name yet, either. She frowned at him, and he noticed the dark circles under her eyes, which were bloodshot.
"My name? I am woman. I am you. I am nothing. Just like you."
And then she was gone. Helmuth wanted to call after her, to apologize for upsetting her so, but he remained silent. After a few moments he clambered over to the tray, tucking into the food right in the doorway as he peered down the corridor. The woman's form was but a shadow, fading into shadows as she retreated.
"What do I do after I eat?"
he hollered, not caring if he disturbed the other boys, not caring if the king heard him, not caring about much at all if he was being honest with himself. He didn't expect the nameless woman to answer, but she did, her voice echoing down the hall.
"Climb,"
was all she said. So he did. Day after day he returned to the throne room, spending hours upon hours trying to conquer the rope. He learned from his past mistakes, realizing his own limitations. When his arms began to shake from weariness, he would slide back down the rope rather than pushing higher and falling. It was a good thing, too, because a fall from the heights he could now achieve would have killed him at worst and shattered his spine or skull at best. Strangely, however, he didn't grow scared when he looked down any more. Quite the opposite. He felt at peace. He felt victorious. The rope wasn't the enemy. Not any more, at least, if it had ever been. It was a tool. At night he dreamed of reaching the top, rolling onto the surface of the boulder, staring up at an entire world of stars or clouds or sky, not just the small circle he could see now. He didn't know what he would do then, only that it would feel like escape. And perhaps that would be enough. On this day, he was three-quarters of the way to the top, his greatest height yet. The temptation was strong to push onward, to give everything he had in his final ascent. He took a deep breath, reining in his emotions before sliding all the way to the bottom. The rope slipped through his calloused, sweaty hands easily now. They still bled sometimes, but that was nothing next to the hope of reaching the top. At the bottom, he eased himself to a sitting position, flinching slightly when he realized someone else was there. It surprised him because he hadn't seen anyone in days, save for the forlorn, unspeaking boys in the rooms he passed twice daily. His food and water were brought when he was climbing, and he never saw who delivered it, though he assumed it was the grey-haired woman. Now, however, he was shocked to find a familiar man standing before him. Krako. Helmuth started, but then realized he didn't have the slightest idea what to say. Krako shifted from foot to foot, clearly nervous.
"I didn't tell the king about what happened, if that's what you're wondering."
"Why not?" The carriage driver squinted, as if he himself wasn't certain of the answer.
"Because I feared what he might do to you."
"But I hurt you," Helmuth said, immediately realizing it was a foolish thing to say. "Am I trying to convince him to tell the king?"
"It wasn't intentional, though, was it?"
The man's eyes locked on his, and Helmuth found his stare strangely comforting, almost fatherly. He shook his head. "It's only happened once before." He couldn't believe he was talking so openly about himself, but it felt good. Like a weight was slowly being lifted from his shoulders with each word. "Me losing control of it, that is." Krako seemed to consider his words.
"What is it?"
Helmuth slumped forward, feeling suddenly exhausted, and not from the climb.
"I don't know. It's new."
Krako bit his lip, closed his eyes, opened them. When he spoke again, his words were halting, placed one at a time. precise.
"I felt utter despair," he said, "though even that seems too casual a word for it. I could see things, bad things, vile things, teeth in the dark, biting, crunching, devouring. Me. They were devouring me. There was no hope. Not for me. Not for anyone. I wanted it to be over. I wanted to die."
His words were like knives jabbing Helmuth's ears. I made him feel that way. The smoke. The hot pulse in my chest. What is it? What am I? They were questions without answers, and there was only one thing left to say. I'm sorry. Krakow nodded.
I won't tell the king about any of this. Just be careful, son. There's only one thing King Strait fears, and it's not armies or beasts or ghosts.
What is it?
Magic.
Magic. It was a word used occasionally in the north, but mostly in fairy tales or talk of the forest dwellers in the east. Every so often a witch would develop a devout following, but would eventually be shunned and cast out. The North believed in one thing and one thing only, strength. But now...
Is that what this thing is inside me?
Helmuth wondered, lying in bed.
Magic?
And if so, how had it gotten there?
How was it possible?
There was only one answer. The fate marked. For the last century or so, their fame had grown. They were born with strange markings only visible under torchlight, markings that gave them specific powers. They manifested themselves through the Four Kingdoms, from Fanes to Calip, from Night's End to Feria. There was even one in the north, the Ice Lord, who could channel ice through his fingertips. Long had he fought for Helmuth's father and the crown.
I am not fate-marked, Helmuth thought now, frowning at the cracks in the ceiling.
Of course he wasn't. Like all babes, he'd been inspected under torchlight when he was born. And, like most babes, he bore no markings. But what if his, for whatever reason, had taken longer to develop, finally manifesting itself on that life-changing night in Blackstone? Was such a thing even possible? Before the fate marked appeared, most would have believed them to be impossible. And anyway, he realized, I've stood naked in this dark place numerous times, my body lit only by torchlight. And nothing had happened. Not the faintest glimpse of the marking that appeared only when... it hit him. Only when I'm angry. Helmuth peered down the long corridor, scanning for movement, listening for sounds. Nothing. He shucked off his shirt, staring at the smooth contours of his muscled chest. He wondered whether his family would recognize him any more. There were even hairs beginning to sprout at odd angles, dark and spiky. Focus. The torchlight danced across his skin, but the only light was from the orange-yellow reflection of the flames. Helmuth closed his eyes and drew his childhood into his mind. Shame was the first emotion he felt, hearing the nicknames uttered just loud enough for him to reach his ears. There goes the maimed prince. To think he'll be our king some day. Frozen hell, save us all. His shame morphed to a sadness so deep he could feel it in the marrow of his bones. He remembered the day his father stripped him of his birthright because he was too weak, too damaged. It didn't matter that he'd been born like this, that he'd never been given a chance. Hope came next, as surprising as a gusty breeze on a windless day. Hope for a better life elsewhere, anywhere else. But in Blackstone, where he only found more shame and sadness, his anger was born. He hated the soldiers who had made he and the other boys work for nothing but scraps of gruelish food, unfit for animals. He hated his father for not believing in him. He hated his brothers for their constant japes and arrogance. He even hated little Zelda for not coming to him that day when he needed a friend the most. And now, most of all,
He hated the horrid king holding he and these other pitiful boys captive, treating them like possessions. The anger came hot and fierce, exploding in his chest. He opened his eyes, his stare as intense as it had ever been. His chest was no longer smooth, pale skin. Not only. Three black markings had appeared, sheened with bright white light, pulsing like a heartbeat. They almost appeared liquid. Blood, he thought. They are drops of black blood. And they are mine. Mine to command. Helmuth didn't know what to feel. Though he knew he was the same person he'd always been, he felt different, stronger. Not just physically, but mentally too. Emotionally. He'd faced his old feelings of shame, of sadness, of fruitless hope, and he'd honed them into something else. Anger. Power. A weapon? While he tried to wrap his mind around these revelations, he returned to his routine, attending the throne room each day to climb the rope. Krako showed up most days, and Helmuth began asking questions. "Where is the king?" Krako sighed.
"Not here."
"I know." Another sigh.
"Fighting."
"You mean conquering?" Helmuth said, remembering the stories Jorg used to tell him. Stories of the House of Straight taking over the world one kingdom at a time. Krako snorted out a laugh.
"Usually you would be right, but not this time. The Lesser have long thwarted Crimea."
Helmuth's heart did a little flip. The Lesser? He remembered the last story Jorg had ever told him before he ran away. "You mean they're real? The barbarians?" Krako nodded seriously.
"As real as a thorn in the king's arse."
"They live in the northern mountains," Helmuth murmured, the story coming back to him one piece at a time. "They've defeated the Crimeans more than a dozen times. Why don't the Crimeans give up? Why do they care?" It was a question that had nagged at him ever since he'd first heard the story. An echo of a smile seemed to ripple across Krako's lips.
"Three reasons. One, the Straits are too proud to give up, especially when their enemy is so close, right on Crimea's border. Two, the mountains to the north are largely unexplored, and there is assumed to be precious metals for the taking."
"And the third reason?" Krako's echo smile turned grim.
"It is said if the individual barbarian clans ever united, their number would be as vast as the salt in the sea. If they weren't as dumb as rocks, they could swarm across the whole world."
"Why now?" Helmuth asked Krako when he showed up the next day. He'd had a night to sleep on all the information, and now he had more questions. "Why is King Straight going to war against the Lesser again now?"
"Can we talk about something else?" Krako said.
"No. So either talk or leave." Helmuth couldn't believe his boldness. He wondered if his tongue would be so sharp the next time he faced the king. "If he survives the Lesser," he thought.
"He should be so lucky." "Fine. The barbarians are attacking the borders. An entire village was burned to the ground. When King Strait's soldiers finally arrived, there was nothing left but bones."
"Frozen hell. So it's true." "They're cannibals," he said. Krako nodded, wrinkling his nose at the word.
"There are few things Crimeans fear. We fear the House of Straight, and we fear the Lesser, nothing else."
Unsummoned, an image of one of the Lesser, a larger female one, sprang into Helmer's mind based on Jorg's description. The immense, muscled barbarian leapt atop the king, who was powerless against the attack. His throat opened in an instant, and then she sank her fangs into his face. Strangely, the image wasn't as repulsive as he thought it would be. He wondered whether the barbarians could ever be united. And if they were, was Krako right? Would they swarm across the entire world?
"It's what the world deserves," he thought darkly.
He shook his head, wondering where the thought had come from. He couldn't truly think that. Could he?
"There's the maimed prince. Frozen hell, save us all."
"You have your own talents, but you are no warrior.
This from his own father.
"Get back to work!"
the soldiers in Blackstone had shouted after Harry had fallen from the roof. "King Straight is not a good man," Vryn had said, before jumping to his death.
"I take things that are thrown out, unwanted, and I make them beautiful," the king had said.
"Kid!"
a voice shouted, jarring him from his thoughts. He found Krako backing away from him, chased by the grey fog pouring from Helmuth's chest. He was no longer surprised by what he could do, no longer feared it. With naught but a thought, he sucked it back inside himself. Krako stood panting, his eyes wide with fear, his hands held before him as if he might have been able to hold off the fog of despair Helmuth had accidentally summoned. But Helmuth knew such a thing was impossible. "Because I am unstoppable." The king returned to Rockland in a foul mood. Krako had already informed Helmuth that the Crimean army had been defeated in the northern mountains. Well, sort of. It was hard to discern victory from defeat against this mountain-dwelling enemy, who attacked from the shadows and whose true number could only be guessed at. At the least, the king had retreated, leaving only enough soldiers to protect his borders. Helmuth stood before him, balancing on his hands, his arm muscles flexing as they held his body aloft. The king said, "You are still hideous, pathetic. You cannot even stand." They were words that once would have cut Helmuth to the quick. Not any more. Instead, they seemed to bounce off his skin, skittering away and vanishing as if they'd never been spoken. "Have you even climbed the rope?"
"3/4,
Helmuth said. The king snorted.
"Pathetic. You were too scared to go on. You will never be anything. You will always be a cripple. You think walking around on your hands like a crab will make you strong? I could squash you under a single boot."
Helmuth felt his anger rising, but tamped it down. The temptation was great to unleash his growing power, but it still didn't feel like the right time. The king might shout for his soldiers. They might swarm him before he could disarm them with the fog. Or they might shoot arrows from afar. No, when he finally decided to fight back, he needed to be certain he would win.
"Then do it," he said instead, his voice low.
The king laughed, actually laughed.
"I've missed this part of my life," he said. "The thrill of battle has its allure."
"Even when you lose,"
Helmuth wanted to say.
"But this is my true calling. When I am finished with you, you won't even recognize yourself."
"I already don't," Helmuth thought, "and I like it.
Now climb, all the way to the top."
Helmuth almost lost his balance, surprised by the turn of events.
"Now?
Did I stutter?"
"I am not ready. In another week, perhaps."
The king stepped forward, grabbed his arm and shoved him toward the rope. Though Helmuth tried to brace his fall, his legs tangled and he landed hard on his cheek, wincing.
"You will make the climb now, or you will die."
"What?"
Helmuth stared at the king.
"So, this is it," he thought.
He didn't have more time to plot and wait. There would be no right moment to unleash his power. It was now or never. But first, at the least, he should attempt the climb once more.
"Fine."
He pushed his body up and reached for the rope. And then he started to climb. His muscles responded immediately, settling into the rhythm they'd grown accustomed to after days of climbing. Clutch with one hand, reach with the other, pull, pull, pull. The first half of the ascent was easy now, and though his face was tensed with the effort, he even managed a smile. He wished he could see the king's face, his jaw dropping open at the progress Helmuth had made in such a short period of time. That's when he smelled it. At first, it was just a bitter tang in the air, a whiff of something he had never smelled in this carved-out boulder palace. He almost stopped, but then thought better of it and kept climbing. The first tendrils of smoke climbed past him, curling as they sought the fresh air and open sky above. He stopped.
"Climb, boy,"
the king said, a hint of amusement in his tone. Helmuth looked back.
What the frozen hell?
The rope was alight with fire, streaked with curls of grey-black smoke that seemed to cling to it for a moment before going airborne. Like him, the smoke sought its freedom. The king held a torch, casting a devil's shade of red across his haughty, victorious expression. Helmuth tried to summon anger, but found himself cold with fear. The first quarter of the rope had already been chewed away by fire, and even if he slid down and dropped, he would suffer grievous injuries, maybe even death. His eyes wide, his throat tight. He realized that the king's prior words were a promise, not a threat. You will make the climb now, or you will die. Once, Helmuth might have given up. Frozen hell! Not so long ago he might have even wanted this fate. But everything had changed the moment he gained some semblance of control over the power inside him. I am fate-marked, he thought now, and this is not my fate. He angled his head away from the fire, focusing on the blue sky and a single white bird winging its way across the endless expanse. And Helmuth climbed, hand over hand, up and up, not even considering the fact that the task would be made easier with two good legs, because in his world that had never been a possibility. Smoke chased him, stinging his eyes, which began to water furiously, tears dripping from his chin. But still he climbed, his vision blurred by smoke and tears. 3/4 of the way up, he passed his previous best mark. However, unlike the last time he reached this height, his arms did not wobble, did not weaken. A pull higher. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. His sweat-slick hands slipped and he almost fell, clutching the rope with a single hand, gripping the woven strands so tightly he felt them cut through his calluses and into the meat of his palm. It should have been the end of Helmuth Garrick, but he was strong now. It wasn't the end. He gritted his teeth and swung his opposite arm back over, snatching the rope, regaining control. Fire licked at his feet, hungry, clawing. A sudden thought sprung unbidden into his mind. The fire at his heels was like the lesser, ravenous, uncaring of who or what they destroyed, devouring all. Like a horde, he thought. Confused, without direction, powerful only if united in a single purpose by a single leader, aimed at their enemies like an arrow shot by a master marksman. I can be their leader. The thought was outrageous, impossible, and yet in this moment, with flames burning his heels and smoke stinging his eyes, anything was possible. But only if he made the climb and escaped the fire. Now, here. He shoved the idea to the back of his mind and set his sights on the end of the rope as it disappeared over the edge of the cliff. He reached higher, lengthening each upward pull, feeling the heat recede the slightest bit, a reprieve that felt like a hailstorm abating. His muscles quivered but didn't weaken, bulging from his skin so hard he almost expected them to break through. Somewhere beneath him the king was shouting something, but he couldn't make out the words. Couldn't hear anything but the beat of his own heart, not in his chest, but in his skull, hammering away again and again, and the sun hit him full in the face, and for a moment he was blinded, almost forgetting himself, and reaching up to block the light with his hand, a mistake which would have been fatal. The return of the heat at his feet snapped him back to reality, and he flung himself over the edge of the boulder, grabbing an iron post hammered into its face where the rope was tied. His next motion was to roll away just as the flames, pushed by a stiff wind, shot up and over, tearing through the rest of the rope and leaving a trail of ash where Helmuth had been a moment earlier. Helmuth lay on his back, staring up at the most beautiful sky he'd ever laid eyes on. A rarity in Crimea, there was not a single cloud marring the glassy blue surface, and he might have been staring into a mirror if not for the lack of reflection. Moons were painted on the cobalt expanse, one green, one red, both full. It was something that only happened twice a year, and he knew that on this night they would come together and kiss for a single, stolen moment, before going their separate ways, only to meet again half a year later. In the daylight they were fuzzy and faded, but in the night, Helmuth knew, They would be as radiant as mirrored globes under the light of a noonday sun. Helmuth now knew that the king's shouts had been to his guards, his soldiers, which made Helmuth realize something else. He didn't expect me to make the climb. He expected me to die. However, once the king realized there was a chance Helmuth would outrun the fire, he'd sent his guards to clamber up the sloped portion of the boulder on the opposite side. He thought I would try to escape. Me, a cripple, with no strength in my legs. Once, Helmuth would have scoffed at such a notion, but not now. He is smart to fear me escaping. It will make it harder, yes, but not impossible. Now, as the guards placed him before the king, who sat in his stone throne, Helmuth felt much larger than his true stature. "Go," the king said to the guards, and they went. Helmuth said nothing, relishing the silence and the power it gave him. "See what I have made you," the king said. It should have sent Helmuth into a rage, but he was fully in control of his own emotions. Staring up at that perfect sky had brought him peace. Control. It had honed his desires, his goals. He remembered that mad, fleeting thought about unifying the northern barbarian clans. He remembered that word that had burst into being like a shadow cast by the first rays of dawn sunlight. Horde. It felt so right, in the same way that calling them the lesser felt so wrong. For the barbarians were not lesser, they were more. They had defeated the most powerful nation in the world for years, decades, centuries. They were unbeaten, despite the impossible odds stacked against them, despite being a fractured people, leaderless. If the clans ever unified... Helmuth smiled at his own thoughts, envisioning a time when he loomed over the king, instead of the other way around. "What are you smiling about?"
"I made myself," Helmuth said simply.
"Bah!" the king scoffed. "You would have never climbed to the top if I hadn't been here."
"It would have taken longer, perhaps," Helmuth said. "But I would have made it."
The king's expression changed from one of gloating to one of anger in an instant. "You think my father and grandfathers conquered the world by being patient? Patience is akin to cowardliness, an excuse to hide from your fears." There were a lot of words, but the king wasn't really saying anything. Nothing true, at least. Because he would be patient, and it would be the king's undoing. Helmuth said, "May I go back to my room?" The king stared at him for a long moment, and Helmuth thought he might deny the request. But in the end, being asked for his permission was enough to remind the king that he was the one in control.
Let him think that.
King Strait waved a hand as if he couldn't care less what Helmuth did. Helmuth bided his time, continuing his daily strengthening regimen. The king didn't summon him for over a week. And then he did. The fear in the grey-haired woman's kind eyes was enough to tell Helmuth to be wary. In the throne room, King Strait lay on a mattress, his eyes closed, his cheek pressed against the pad. A thin sheet was cast over his body, almost how one would cover a corpse. Helmuth had made little sound as he entered, but the king must have sensed his presence, because he said, "Come closer." A tendril of unease crept its way up Helmuth's spine as he crabbed over. Something was off. Facts lined themselves up in his head, and then began to stack on top of one another, like the blocks of a tower, or a building, rising through the clouds, higher than anything else in the world. The grey-haired woman's sad eyes. Krako's fear of the king. King Strait kicking out his crutches, forcing him to climb. Strengthening him physically while beating him down mentally, emotionally. The boys in the rooms, with their unseeing eyes and broken expressions. And at the top of the tower, Vryn. King Strait is not a good man.
"The oil," the king said now, his eyes remaining closed.
Helmuth noticed the glass vial of honey-coloured ointment resting near the makeshift bed. King Strait was completely at ease. He feared nothing, certainly not this crippled boy he believed he was about to break forever. It would be so easy, Helmuth knew, He could summon his anger, send the fog into the king, watch as he quaked with fear at the things he saw. That Helmuth made him see. Is this the right time?